This is 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, December 11th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a few minutes, a town that's been involved in tourism since its founding, Eureka Springs, is reaching out to a very 21st century kind of tourist, one that comes with a mountain bike. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek has the details in just a couple of minutes. Ozarks at Large can, 6 days a week, take you to Eureka Springs, to Fort Smith, and to a firefighter training facility.
It should also be mentioned that training in a facility designed for that purpose is inherently safer than storm drains and rubble piles.
That was from a story about a new fire training facility in Northwest Arkansas that we aired in July. We can take you almost everywhere in our region because of listener support. Listener support made Ozarks at Large a reality more than 28 years ago and allowed us, almost 7.5 years ago, to expand to an everyday show. Listener support gives us the batteries for our digital recorder, so Antoinette Grajeda can bring you the story of a woman creating a food pantry for all who need it at any time of day.
And it's really one of the most frequented, just because there's so many families in and out through here, and a lot of families have been able to contribute to it. A lot of families have been able to take from it as well. So it's been amazing. It actually empties out within the hour. Yes. I've seen it empty within 30 minutes. A lot of times I'll fill it, I'll go run a couple laps around the park and come back and it's empty.
Yes. Your support allows 91.3 to bring you programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered that do cost us money to bring you. And it's vitally important that we have these resources to help us understand the Middle East, a new tax bill, and the possible ramifications of a single Senate election in Alabama tomorrow. But your support also allows Ozarks at Large to explain food insecurity in the River Valley and to explain how a University of Arkansas-supported program tries to ease teacher shortages throughout the state. That's coming up later today. Your support at supportkuaf.com or by calling 800-522-5823 brings you the world and your world to you every day. Please consider supporting your public radio station and your public radio station's very own news coverage with your financial contribution in the amount you choose. You can contribute online at supportkuaf.com. You can also call us right now, 800-522-5823, and thanks. This is Ozarks at Large. The mountain bike trail boom that's happening across Northwest Arkansas is now spreading to Eureka Springs. In the next year, the area could see as many as 20 more miles of biking and hiking trails, starting with a project at Lake Leatherwood. In part one of a story about Eureka Springs biking, Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us about the new trails in that part of town and why Eureka is jumping on board.
The equipment and rock-solid trail contracting crew arrived at Lake Leatherwood the Monday after Thanksgiving. Since then, they've been building the first of what will eventually be four new downhill lines, in addition to the existing line on the west side of the lake.
We've been looking at what did we have that everywhere else didn't have in this explosion of boom, and we'd identified that it was our downhill course was something that not many places had, certainly not with a shuttle capability.
That's Justin Huss, the director of the Eureka Springs Parks and Recreation Commission.
We have between 400 and 500 foot elevation drop in the current downhill, and if you lay that out, you can get quite a good distance out of that. So that alone, just the geography of it, of the area is great.
Downhill mountain biking is, as the name suggests, driven by gravity. Mountain bikers start at the top of the trail and navigate their way down to the bottom. The skilled ones do it fast. Downhill trails tend to be full of features like large rocks, drops, and jumps.
The idea behind gravity riding is that it is a little bit more on the advanced end, but it's more playful and more fun, so it's bringing a lot of new people into the sport.
Aaron Rogers is the owner and president of Rock Solid Trail Contracting, which has been brought in from Michigan to build all the new downhill lines at Lake Leatherwood.
So we wanted to utilize kind of the first two ridges closest to Highway 62 there and create as many gravity experiences as we could within that zone, so we have this whole gravity area. and it would be like the first gravity area to be kind of developed in, you know, the Northwest Arkansas region.
Rogers is a well-known trail builder, and his claim to fame in many ways is the trail system in Copper Harbor, Michigan. The system now includes 35 miles of trail and ranks in the top 20 trail systems in the world. Rogers says the trails attract 25 to 30,000 users a year to Copper Harbor.
I mean, it's 88 people at the end of the road, 300 people in the summer during business season, but really all they have is tourism. That's it. And it's at the end of the road, so there's no way to get there unless people make it a destination.
Justin Huss says Eureka Springs is already established as a destination, a quirky mountain town in the Arkansas Ozarks with winding streets, Victorian homes, haunted hotels, and plenty of unique restaurants and shops. But Huss says the city also wants to become a destination for mountain bikers.
This is a new group, some new blood to bring into the community. And in our historic, you know, visitor base is aging, you know, and some of the aspects of it.
Huss says the Downhill Trails project has moved along quickly. Initial discussions with the Walton Family Foundation started a little over 2 months ago.
We did slow the process down a little bit. When we were first contacted 2 months ago, everybody wanted to start in a couple weeks. And you know, we just had a few things we had to figure out.
The Parks and Recreation Commission approved a cooperative agreement with the Walton Family Foundation for the Downhill Trails project in late November. And Huss says the commission is putting in $50,000 for Miners Rock Trail improvements. The foundation will cover the cost of building the downhill course in the form of a donation. But Huss says the Parks and Rec Commission made sure they have final approval of any trail plans to make sure their concerns are addressed before anything is built.
The biggest challenge we face is the interface with our existing Miners Rock Trail.
Huss says Miners Rock is one of the more popular trails at Lake Leatherwood, and during the planning phase of the downhill trails, he found a portion of the trail was built on property that doesn't belong to the city. Huss says that's something that will have to be addressed. Safety is another concern, he says, making sure the downhill trails don't intersect with the existing Miners Rock Trail in a way that could put hikers and mountain bikers at risk.
Finding the balance in there to maintain what's one of our iconic trails with the actual Miners Rock, the standing rocks, sinkholes, some of those things up there, we want to be able to make sure we maintain and or honor that trail. And that's a little challenge, and we're working on that as we continue on.
Huss says the Downhill Trails project has also been able to progress quickly because the Parks and Rec Commission was already working with field botanist Theo Witzel of the Arkansas Department of Natural Heritage on a resource inventory at Lake Leatherwood. Huss says protecting areas around the lake known as glades is a top priority.
We have good maps and good data on that.
Huss says one of the members of the Parks and Rec Commission has also been working with Aaron Rogers, who is a botanist himself.
One of our commissioners, Stephen Foster, who's author of several Peterson Field Guides, has been out with them identifying unique plants in the area, which we do have.
Rogers says as a trail builder, he has a responsibility to the land to have as little impact as possible.
You're talking about a 3 to 4 foot ribbon of dirt, you know, through a wood. So think about actually how many square feet, like, of impact we're having compared to other forms of development. It's actually very minimal. You know, a mountain biker's experience is within that 4 foot ribbon of trail. You know, they're not wandering off, whereas hikers have more of a tendency to cut trail and create more impact.
And although it may not seem like it to some, Rogers says mountain bikers are land and resource conservationists at heart.
As a user group, we want access to, you know, the forest, the terrain, getting out into the wilderness.
Justin Huss says so far the Parks and Rec Commission has approved one of the 4 new downhill lines. And while Rogers and his crew build that one, the commission will assess the suggested routes for the other 3 downhill lines. Huss says the city has also been able to acquire land at the top of the downhill course area off of Highway 62, where they plan to build a parking lot and a helipad, as downhill riding is inherently more dangerous than other types of mountain biking. He's also working with City Transit to establish a potential shuttle from the bottom of the downhill course back to the top.
The one really nice thing that we like about it, and that we're at Special Leatherwood in our spot, is the 12-month dynamic, because Eureka Springs had kind of, in the past, we'd sort of shut down or towards Christmas time and for a couple months, and this is something that can bring people year-round. And we're seeing a lot of that. A lot of people from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, up in that area, who and hear it over and over. Oh, we've been going to Moab for years and years, but it's 27 hours and it's 10 to 12 to get here.
And Huss says the revenue brought in by mountain bikers will allow the Parks and Rec Commission to make improvements to the city's other amenities. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Justin Huss says he expects at least part of the downhill trails project to be completed by April of next year. During a public meeting last week, Eureka Springs residents did express concerns about the impact the project will have on the environment and how quickly everything was approved. Huss says he feels like the commission has addressed those issues and will continue to keep an eye on the project during construction. He also says the commission is considering designating some trails at Leatherwood for hikers only. And later this week on Ozarks at Large, we'll have the second part of the story. The Passion Play in Eureka Springs is also getting in on the trail boom. We'll have more about that on Thursday's edition of Ozarks at Large. And just ahead on this Monday edition of Ozarks at Large, Arkansas Teachers Corps. It was founded in 2012. The first cohort of teachers went into classrooms in high-need school districts in 2013. We'll get an update and find out how many teachers they're looking for next fall. That's just ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway ends this week. It's your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters, like Bombadil's Cafe, Arcega's Coffee Roasters, and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Winners announced this Friday during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com to register.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. And for just a few minutes, I'm going to explain how public radio works. Let's use the programs that air immediately before and after our noon daily edition of Ozarks at Large as a jumping-off point. Fresh Air, every day at 11 a.m., then again at 6, providing in-depth interviews every weekday of the year. This year, we, KUAF, paid more than $21,000 so we could bring you a year's worth of Terry Gross and Fresh Air twice each weekday. Here and Now, which airs after our noon edition of Ozarks, is a daily two-hour tour through the news and culture of the day. We pay more than $16,000 for Here and Now. And Here, Now, is where you come into the mix. The largest part of our budget that allows us to have money to write the checks to pay for Fresh Air, Here and Now, and all the other shows you hear, the biggest part of the budget is listener support. Financial contributions from you and listeners like you. You can make a donation now at supportkuaf.com or by calling right now this afternoon, 800-522-5823, and contribute what you wish to contribute and allow us to bring you deep dives into the most important news of the day every day.
I'm NPR correspondent Chris Arnold, and last fall we reported on a federal investigation that found that Wells Fargo employees were opening extra accounts for customers without their consent.
This was a widespread nationwide practice.
It was a major story, but we got a tip from a former employee that it wasn't the whole picture. So we kept investigating until we found something bigger. Not only was Wells Fargo encouraging employees to illegally open accounts, they were also retaliating against those who refused.
If you don't meet your solutions, you will be fired, and it's going to be on your permanent record.
Our reporting on the Wells Fargo scandal uncovered a much bigger story than anyone expected, and our reporting isn't done yet. When you become a sustaining member, you help me and the rest of our journalists look for the story behind the stories. The best way to help us dig deep is to become a sustaining member. Thanks, and here's how to help.
Your support provides an opportunity for us to bring you news you won't hear anywhere else. You can support important stories, real journalism, captivating interviews by going to supportkuaf.com. Or by calling us right now at 800-522-5823. And thank you for continuing to be part of this public radio story. This is Ozarks at Large. In just the past few days on the show, we've discussed shortages in Arkansas for both nurses and truck drivers. Some school districts in the state can add teachers to that list of shortages. Arkansas Teacher Corps attempts to reduce the gap between available teaching positions in high-need districts and the number of available teachers. The ATC is a nonprofit organization designed to guide college graduates into a teaching career. Last week, Shelley Ashleman, the executive director of Arkansas Teacher Corps, and Gary Ritter, a professor of education policy at the University of Arkansas and a co-founder of ATC, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Founded in 2012, Arkansas Teacher Corps placed its first cohort of teachers in schools in the fall of 13. The second deadline for the next class is approaching, January 3rd. And Shelley Ashleman says the extensive training and support program is open to a wide range of possible new teachers, including recent college graduates and people considering a career change. She says potential new teachers may have bachelor degrees in math, botany, chemistry, or any number of disciplines.
We're looking for anyone who has a desire and a passion to teach and that content background to support their work as a teacher in the classroom. We're looking for people who are recent college graduates wondering what's next, people who have perhaps finished up a master's degree asking those same questions, or people who are changing careers and looking for an opportunity to serve students in Arkansas.
What degrees does someone have to be involved?
They need to have a bachelor's degree. They need to come to us with a content knowledge background. So it could be in the sciences, like you mentioned. It could be in math. It could be in business. It could be in English. All of those things can translate into classroom teaching.
Where will you go? Let's say you sign up, you go through the training, you're ready to go. Where will you be teaching in the next school year?
That's a good question, and that is a distinctive piece of our program. You will not get alternative certification from us and just take that and teach anywhere. You will teach in selected districts that have high need for teachers in the content areas that Shelley described. So we're intentionally serving districts that have traditionally struggled to fill classroom spaces, and particularly high need classroom spaces like upper level math, upper level science, those sorts of fields.
Yeah, right now we're partnered with about 20 districts across Arkansas, and we expect to have that same number next year. And again, as Gary mentioned, they're all districts that are high needs in high need communities that are really in need of teachers to come work in their schools.
What happens in the training?
Our training begins with 7 weeks of residential training in the summer, which includes a clinical element. So our fellows are actually teaching summer school for 4 weeks in the summer. And when they're not in the classrooms with students, they're receiving training around pedagogy, instruction, classroom management, all of the sort of fundamentals of teaching. And then they're training continues throughout the 3 years of their fellowship, where they receive full-day PDs on a regular schedule throughout the year, which is about 8 hours every 6 weeks or so, as well as individualized ongoing coaching, where a coach comes to their classroom, observes their teaching, provides them feedback based on their own needs.
We think this is a distinctive part of our program. It's really important that we have embedded ongoing support for teachers. One of our principles is that teaching in high needs areas and economically disadvantaged areas is a distinctively different endeavor than teaching in general. So we believe that embedded support is critical to succeeding. We don't believe we graduate them from our summer training. They exit and they're on their own. They're not on their own. They have support for all 3 years, and they are not certified until they complete all 3 years in the school district that ATC serves.
I think many people think of teaching as very intimidating, and that might be a reason for hesitancy. You're in front of a classroom for a long time, and you mentioned higher math and things like that. You got to know your stuff.
It's really intimidating, and we have different ideas about how important the support is. Some of us believe that the support that we need to know exactly how to coach teachers. Others of us believe that maybe just having someone there is important. We have a diverse staff with different ideas on how we should do this, and we try different ways, and we fail a lot, and then we try new strategies. But one of, I think, our guiding principles is that we do need to be there for new teachers because it is that intimidating, even if we don't know exactly what to say when they're struggling in the classroom. Now, our coaches have had success in the classroom. They do have experience coaching. So often they will have very specific, helpful tips and guidance to share. But other times, maybe it's just the helpfulness of a friendly face being there when you're struggling in your third week of teaching and this great lesson that you planned didn't work out at all like you planned it.
What's the communication like between the school district that might have a high need for teachers and y'all? I mean, do they let you know how many teachers they need, what kind of teachers, what subjects?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're in pretty close contact with the districts throughout the year. We make a special push in the spring to find out what the positions that are open and what do schools need. We get about 250 requests for teachers each year, and a lot of those are with current partner districts and with districts that we're not yet able to serve. But we ask them simply, what do you need? Who do you need? And we try to match our fellows to their needs.
Are you looking for people from Arkansas, from outside of Arkansas?
So yes and yes.
Okay. That's...
But we do believe we have an intentional focus on recruiting Arkansans because we believe that there's perhaps a greater likelihood of them persisting. A lot of the students who or recent graduates, or even mid-career changers who come to us feel that they've been blessed, they've been lucky, they've been given great educations, and they might want to give back. Others feel like they've been given lots in the state of Arkansas, so they want to give back to schools and districts and children in the state of Arkansas. But we certainly are not going to say no to others who apply from outside of the state who might want to move here or have some connection here. And like the idea that we both have an accelerated path to teaching, but that we also have embedded support throughout the 3 years. And finally, that we have a commitment to social justice, that we're just not placing teachers anywhere. We are intentionally placing teachers in the districts that are struggling to find great teachers. It's a rigorous application process, so it's not an easy application process. The application requires you to be thoughtful, to articulate your ideas and your interests for why you want to do this. We think that's helpful. It's, as you said, it's a very hard job. So someone half interested in it is not going to succeed, is not going to do well. Then we have, after a thorough review of the application, we have an in-person interview, which is a half-day screening event where the applicants engage in role-playing. They teach sample lessons. They interact with each other. They do writing prompts. They have one-on-one interviews. So it is not a simple process. We do not want to send out to the schools that really need high-quality teachers people who we haven't vetted as best as we can.
Thank you both for your time.
Thank you so much.
Shelley Ashleman is the Executive Director of Arkansas Teacher Corps, and Gary Ritter is a Professor of Education Policy at the University of Arkansas and a co-founder of Arkansas Teacher Corps. They discussed the program during a conversation at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week. The next application deadline for Arkansas Teacher Corps is January 3rd. The final deadline is March 5th. Gary Ritter says ATC is seeking at least 40 people to make it through the application process and begin teaching in a high-need district in Arkansas in the fall. There is much more information at arkansasteachercorps.org.
Support for 91.3 comes from Walton's Five and Dime at the Walmart Museum, where Santa Claus will be making a visit Thursday, December 14th, 4 to 8 p.m. Located by the festive holiday lights on the Bentonville Square, the Walmart Museum will be open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday and noon to 9 on Sunday. 273-1329 or WalmartMuseum.com.
It is Monday, December 11th, 2017. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about what we're going to talk about and much more at talkbusiness.net. Michael, how are you on this Monday?
I'm doing well. How's the world in Northwest Arkansas?
It's turning. It's going. It's never sleeping.
Okay.
Or rarely sleeping, I suppose.
Yep.
I want to talk to you about something called the American Community Survey. It's this report that takes a snapshot of a four-year period for states, including Arkansas. And I don't know what we come up with other than there's some interesting numbers in there. Everything from median income to how many bachelor's degrees are in the state. What do you make of this report?
Well, it's first of all, you know, it's a Census Bureau report. It's based on surveys, volunteer surveys that families and individuals do. And then, you know, then the Census Department plugs it into a formula and they pull some broad numbers out of it. So I wouldn't treat it as gospel. I mean, it's not 100% accurate, but it is a good baseline. The Census Bureau's done it, conducts this, has conducted, I should say, over a period of decades. So it does create a good baseline. And often we will see when the census then is conducted every 10 years, you can see that the surveys aren't that far off. I'll provide that caveat. But the key metric in this report, and you noted it, this is for statistics. If you love statistics and numbers, then you probably, this is your thing. But the key metric in this was that the state's median household income fell almost 1% compared to the previous report. Went from 42,857 during the 2007-2011 snapshot to 42,336 through the 2012 and 2016 snapshot. Now, obviously, that's not the direction you want to go. The survey that it does not provide any reasons why numbers change. We talked to Dr. Michael Packow with the Arkansas Economic Development Institute. He couldn't provide any reason. He knew that that his point was that wages have been going up in Arkansas based on reports, both anecdotal and through reporting. But he suggested that sometimes you can get these survey or these kind of results in a limited survey. So we'll see if there's any revision in future surveys. Now, the Arkansas median income fell, but the U.S. median income was up 3.2% in the same period. So hopefully that will be revised. And as you said, there are some other numbers. For example, the number of people with bachelor's degrees increased. And then there are just a list of numbers I thought was interesting is that the survey found that 87.7% of Arkansans had some form of health insurance. 94.6% of Arkansans were born in the United States, and only 0.6% of owner-occupied homes in Arkansas are valued at more than $1 million. Now, that's probably like 6% in Northwest Arkansas, but for the rest of the state, it's much lower.
One other number that's at the bottom, and you can find this story at talkbusiness.net, is that nearly 88% of Arkansans had some form of health insurance coverage. That is a number that's higher than it's been in the past.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can mark that up to Obamacare. Now, it'll be interesting to see how that number changes in the next snapshot. If Governor Hutchinson gets the waiver to reduce the poverty level line, that's estimated to take 60,000 people, you know, off that exchange or off that care and into an exchange. So that'll probably change. But this is a good snapshot of where Arkansas is. There was a slight increase in the poverty rate also. So it wasn't the most positive snapshot Arkansas could have had.
No, and you mentioned it. If you're into statistics, this is a great report because it tells you what the average monthly rent is in the state, the commute times. You can just spend a lot of time. And like you said, it's not gospel, and you may not come out with as many answers as questions, but it's still interesting.
Yes. Yeah. And again, we'll see how it's revised. We watch these close.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. He talks to us almost every Friday and Monday. Michael, thank you so much. Have a great work week.
You're welcome, sir. You're the same.
So I'm a recovering addict myself.
Okay.
and I had used drugs in various forms for the last 28 years. And I went into the drug court program in November of 2011.
That's Karen Slater, president and founder of Pearl in Bentonville, supporting the Benton County Adult and Veterans Drug Court Program. KUAF is highlighting Pearl during this season's Giving Tree program. Pearl is in need of non-perishable food, hygiene items, cleaning products for the house, anything that you can think of as a day-to-day item the clients of Pearl can use.
These clients are being successful in the program. They just have a challenge that they need a hand up to keep them on the level of success.
Feel free to drop off your donations at the KUAF studios in Fayetteville or arpearl.org. It's the Giving Tree at 91.3, where local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. Still to come on today's show, Downtown Rogers dives into the holiday season, and this week's edition of Arkansongs explains how Johnny Cash and Christmas are connected. This is the season of giving, and we're taking just a couple of minutes to remind you that your financial gifts to your public radio station, 91.3, keep giving you programs like Morning Edition, This American Life, and yes, Ozarks at Large, keeping these programs on the air. Our listeners, like you, are the single largest part of our operating budget. You can make a tax-deductible contribution at supportkuaf.com or by calling 800-522-5823 right now. And keep your public radio station strong. Perhaps an end-of-year gift to 91.3 is becoming a holiday tradition for you. A contribution in the amount of your choice is maybe a small part of this time of year for you, like placing a wreath on the door, visiting family, or setting the table for a holiday meal.
I'm Susan Stamberg. Every year, I trot out my cranberry relish recipe, the one that sounds terrible but tastes terrific. To me, anyway.
Not again with the cranberry relish.
Why would you put this on a perfectly good turkey?
Is this Jell-O? It looks like Jell-O.
Actually, it doesn't look like Jell-O. It looks like Pepto-Bismol with lumps in it.
Yeah, pass.
Gross.
Onions and cranberry? Come on.
It's so unique.
Sounded good up until horseradish.
Susan, it's disgusting.
Oh, God, the relish.
No, thank you. Well, some of us love it almost as much as you love public radio. Start a tradition we can all relish. Become a sustaining member. Here's how.
You can show us you relish your relationship with public radio and 91.3 by making a contribution right now at supportkuaf.com or by calling 800-522-5823. And if you'd like to become a sustaining member and contribute just a little bit each month that then adds up by the end of the year, you can certainly do that as well. And from all of us at 91.3 and those of us that work on Ozarks at Large each day, thank you very much. It's Monday, December 11th, 2017. With me at the Carver Center for Public Radio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
If I sound hoarse, never think that I'm ill. It's probably that I was singing really loud in my car.
I think that's the best reason to be hoarse.
So I apologize, but I have another way to help you spend your money.
Thank you, because there weren't enough yet.
Because 'tis the season. And what's cooler than buying locally made art?
Almost nothing. Almost nothing.
So, they're doing this thing in Rogers. It's going to happen every month, but there's one happening this week. It's called Art on the Bricks, and it's a pop-up art walk. It's going to happen the second Thursday of every month when all kinds of places are going to host artists. It started with, surprise, Kathy McClure.
Yeah.
Who is Ed McClure's wife. Sorry, that's how I just defined you, Kathy, but big into the art scene, big collector, big lover of all things artistic. And she has a new office on West Walnut Street with Gateway Mortgage Group. Well, look, we have all these nice walls. Let's put some art on it. It's a thing that's going on. It's one of our trendy stories for the end of the year. And so they've started this thing that from 4:30 to 7:30 on the second Thursday, there will be artists in all sorts of places. There will be everything this time from woodworking to stamped silver to pastels to paperwares at places like Brick Street Brews and the Rusty Chair and Wolf and Wander, which I haven't been to, and Arkansas Public Theater, which is how Ed comes into this story, and Hoppe's Hawaiian Bar and Grill and the Urban Blue Hair Salon.
So all over downtown Rogers.
All over downtown Rogers, thus the bricks, because the streets in downtown Rogers are bricked. So free to browse, art to purchase. Also this week, on Tuesday, you can take your fur babies to the Northwest Arkansas Mall from 6 to 8 for photos with Santa.
I can take my dogs and they would... Okay.
I'm picturing taking my three Shih Tzus and a black lab and just how well that would go.
How does this work? You take your dogs and then someone else takes the picture or you take your picture?
I think you can do both.
Okay.
Because they do sell the, you know, they sell the photo sets. So
sure.
I think you can do both. I would say that they should be well-behaved pets, and thus you will not see me there. On Thursday, yet another concert, amazing music, with Fayetteville's own Jonathan Story.
Oh, coming back. He's in Texas now.
He's in Texas now continuing to do amazing things, playing piano. He will be at the Walton Arts Center at 7 o'clock on Thursday for a Home for the Holidays concert, and tickets are $25. And then on Friday, we're back to Shiloh Square in Springdale for Caroling on the Creek. Mm-hmm. Music, art, Santa Claus, and more than 20 fires. Santa's coming in on a fire truck. It starts at 5 o'clock on Friday. If you haven't been to Shiloh Square and the new Walter Turnbow Park,
it's a lot of fun.
Springdale's happening.
All right.
Which I could have told him 30 years ago.
Becca Martin Brown, always ahead of the curve and always with us on Mondays. And you'll be back on Friday.
I will.
She is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
On Christmas Eve, I dreamed I traveled all around the earth. And in my dream, I saw and heard the ways the different people hailed the King whose star shone in the east. And what a dream it was.
Johnny Cash was born J.R. Cash, February 26, 1932, in Kingsland in Cleveland County in South Arkansas, and grew up in Dias in Mississippi County in northeast Arkansas. Though he first made his name for himself in 1955 on Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee, Cash has moved to Columbia Records in mid-1958, saw him musically branching out to concept albums, gospel, folk, protest, even Christmas music. Cash's song, The Christmas Spirit, heard here from the album of the same name, was released in 1963.
In a little town nestled down in Bavarian Germany, I walked along to see what the feeling there would be. And here again was the busy din, the rushing, the yelling. But some kind voice said, Fröhliche Weihnachten, not understanding the words, but forgetting the buying and selling, I felt the Christmas spirit. I said the donkey, shaggy and brown, I carried his mother up and down. I carried his mother to Bethlehem town. I said the donkey, shaggy and brown.
Here's another Cash-written Christmas song called The Gifts They Gave from the same 1963 album, Johnny Cash's first Christmas album, for which he wrote four songs.
I set the dove from the rafters high. I sang him to sleep that he would not cry. We sang him to sleep, my love and I. I set the dove from the rafters high.
Nearly a decade later, Johnny Cash released the Johnny Cash Family Christmas, with less contributions from Cash himself and more from his musical family, including June Carter Cash. Nearly a decade after that, in 1980, Johnny Cash recorded an album of Christmas classics, such as Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Joy to the World, Silent Night, Away in a Manger, and O Come, All Ye Faithful.
Joyful and triumphant, O come ye, O come ye to Bethlehem. Come and behold him, born the King of angels. O come, let us adore him. O come,
Christmas as I Knew It, co-written by June Carter Cash, is one of the most interesting of Cash's holiday-themed songs and appears on a couple of his Christmas albums. The following version was recorded at Nashville, Tennessee's Ryman Auditorium during rehearsals for TV's The Johnny Cash Show in late 1970, but not released until 2003.
One day near Christmas, when I was just a child, Mama called us together. Mama tried to smile. She said, "You know, the cotton crop hadn't been too good this year. Not a lot of spending money, but at least we're all here. I hope you won't expect a lot of Christmas presents. Just be thankful that there's plenty to eat. That'll make things a little more pleasant."
Johnny Cash recorded a second album of all traditional Christmas songs in 1991 on the Delta record label called Johnny Cash Country Christmas. In total, Cash recorded four holiday-themed albums, part of his wide-ranging musical catalog. Johnny Cash died September 12, 2003, following a half-century of music, his Christmas music being but one facet of the long and often varied career of South Arkansas-born, Northeast Arkansas-raised Johnny Cash. Here in its entirety is Johnny Cash with Christmas as I Knew It, co-written by June Carter Cash and recorded at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee, during rehearsals for Johnny Cash's TV show in late 1970.
One day near Christmas, when I was just a child, Mama called us together. Mama tried to smile. She said, "You know, the cotton crop hadn't been too good this year. There's not a lot of spending money, but at least we're all here. I hope you won't expect a lot of Christmas presents. Just be thankful that there's plenty to eat. That'll make things a little more pleasant. And us kids got to thinking how really blessed we were. At least we were all healthy. And most of all, we had her. Roy cut down a pin oak tree and we drug it home, Jack and me. Daddy killed a squirrel and Louise made the bread. Reba decorated the tree with popcorn strings before we went to bed. Yeah, Mom and Daddy sacrificed because this Christmas was kind of lean. After all, there was the babies, Tom and Joanne. And babies got to have a few things. I whittled a whistle for my brother Jack. And though we disagreed now and then, when I gave Jack that whistle, he knew I thought the world of him. Mama made the girls' dresses out of flour sacks. And when she ironed them down, couldn't tell it, they hadn't come from town. A sharecropper family across the road didn't have it as good as us. They didn't have a light in their house, and it was way past dusk. And Mama said, "Well, I bet they don't even have coal oil, let alone apples and oranges and such." Me and Jack took a jar of coal oil and some hickory nuts we had found and walked over to the sharecropper's porch and set them down. A poor old ragged lady eased open the door. She picked up the coal oil and hickory nuts and said, "I sure do thank you, and quickly closed the door. We started back home then, Jack and me. About halfway back, we looked, and in the sharecropper's window, at last was the light. So for one of the neighbors and for us, it was a good Christmas night. Christmas came and Christmas went. Christmas that year was heaven sent. And my daddy put on his rubber boots and paced the floor waiting for the thaw back home in Dias, Arkansas.
Christmas As I Knew It by Johnny Cash, recorded in 1970 at Nashville's Ryman Auditorium during rehearsals for Cash's television show. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Happy holidays.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional local support provided by David Adams, designer and creator of fine jewelry, located on the square in downtown Fayetteville. David supports local shopping for holiday gifts this season and wishes everyone happy holidays and a joyful new year. More information at davidadams.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. One of the most respected journalists, writers, and educators Arkansas ever produced, Roy Reed, died last night. He was a reporter for the Arkansas Gazette, then the New York Times, covering the civil rights movement for the Times in the 1960s. So important and respected for his work covering civil rights, he was portrayed by actor John Lavelle in the 2014 Oscar-nominated movie Selma. After his work as a reporter, Roy Reed taught journalism for 16 years at the University of Arkansas. He also wrote the books Looking for Hogeye, Phobos, The Life and Times of an American Prodigal, and a remarkable memoir, Beware of Limbo Dancers, A Correspondent's Adventures with the New York Times. In 2012, Roy Reed came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about that memoir. He told us then that when he arrived in New York in 1965 to work for the Times, he was not the Southerner that the New Yorkers were expecting.
I was a hill fellow, not a delta fellow in broad terms. I couldn't really speak the language. Well, you hear what I sound like. I sound more like maybe Lyndon Johnson than, you know, Senator, what's his name, from Mississippi or Alabama. And I write a little bit about the difference in the language from the upland South and the deep South, and have a little fun with that. But I was, you know, I did not grow up in anything like a plantation society. And I think that's probably, or in those days at least, back in the 60s, that was the national image of a Southerner, a white Southerner especially. Somebody from Georgia maybe, Louisiana maybe. Mm-hmm. And those of us up on the fringe, western northern Arkansas, I grew up in Hot Springs, we didn't fit that image. And I think that's what I wanted to make clear.
We'll hear much more from that conversation on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7. Roy Reed was 87. Talk Business and Politics reports a multiple building real estate deal in Bentonville is final. The nearly 15.5-acre complex near Rainbow Curve was bought by Sachs Investing Company for more than $28 million. A new program examining the lack of affordable housing in Northwest Arkansas will begin next year through the Fay Jones School of Architecture and Design. The Housing Northwest Arkansas Initiative will begin with $250,000 in support from the Walton Family Foundation. The program, announced this morning, will include an advanced design studio, a regional symposium, and a design competition in the spring 2018 semester. The symposium is scheduled for February 4th, with events in both Fayetteville and Bentonville. As wildfires continue to burn in Southern California, the recent shift to cooler weather is raising the risk of fires in Arkansas. Rainy weather in the state early this month helped to decrease the frequency of fires, but numerous days of lower humidity and dry conditions have brought the risk of fires back to elevated levels. Adrian Barnes is a spokeswoman for the Arkansas Agriculture Department. She says drought conditions continue for much of the state.
The rain that came through was a short-term fix. It's created a nice week of calm weather in terms of fire frequency, but as soon as we have a few days that are sunny with low humidity and any kind of gusty wind, we can be back into a period of high fire frequency.
Barnes says the risk of wildfires remains high for much of Arkansas, though the risk is slightly lower for a 9-county region in the southeastern corner of the state. Drought conditions in 98% of the state this fall are also posing problems for winter grazing animals, with delays in fall planting for crops like wheat and ryegrass. An electrical engineer is the latest winner of the Attell Anand Poetry Prize, handed out by the University of Arkansas Press and the King Fahd Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Arkansas. Peter Twall was given the honor for his collection, Our Earliest Tattoos. He is a Jordanian-American from Baton Rouge, now living in Indiana. He'll receive $1,000, and his collection will be published by the University of Arkansas Press in the fall of 2018. The Walmart Amp is adding a show with two high-profile musical artists to the calendar next June. That's Kesha. She and Macklemore will perform at the Walmart Amp on Monday, June 25th. Tickets go on sale through the usual Walton Art Center avenues on Friday. The Arkansas women's basketball team is 7-3 after defeating Tulsa yesterday in Fayetteville. The 67-41 win is the last game for the Razorbacks until after final exams are over. Arkansas next plays Sunday, hosting UT Arlington. And in fact, the only collegiate athletic events scheduled this week in the region are basketball games on the campus of the University of the Ozarks in Clarksville. The U of O teams will host Mary Hardin Baylor for a women's game at 5:30 Thursday evening, and a men's game is scheduled to follow.
It's the end of a very, very busy news year and a very busy time in many people's lives. But you have a way to stay informed in these busy times. Listen to Morning Edition when you're getting up in the morning or making breakfast or moving around doing a little bit of shopping. Whatever you're doing, we're working around the clock to keep you informed. So when you want to check in, listen to Morning Edition every day.
Morning Edition, every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF, a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kelms. Thank you for spending part of your Monday with us. And if you have given to KUAF in 2017 a financial contribution, thank you so much. If you haven't, or if you'd like to give an additional end-of-year tax-deductible gift, well, this is the perfect time. This is the season of giving end-of-year fundraiser for KUAF. You can give a contribution in the amount you choose at supportkuaf.com at any time. But right now, during this five-day end-of-year season of giving fundraiser, a perfect time to do so. If you'd like to become a sustaining member of KUAF, you can do that online as well. Sustaining members give a bit of money every month, and then at the end of the year, those gifts turn into a pretty significant contribution to KUAF. I know that my wife and I are sustaining members at KUAF. If you're interested in doing that, you can find out more about it at supportkuaf.com. But you can renew your membership, give for the first time ever, or perhaps even give a gift membership in any form or any amount of your choosing right now at supportkuaf.com. Your contributions keep your public radio station strong, keeping programs, local programs like Ozarks at Large, The Pick and Post, and Shades of Jazz on the air, and also helping us pay for the national programs that you listen to, like Morning Edition. This year, Morning Edition will cost us $104,722. That's about $400 per day. We can keep these programs on thanks to you. SupportKUAF.com.